Good morning again. Namaste. And of course, the word namaste is so perfect for today. I honor the light within you. And you know that when I was in India in 73, I learned that namaste actually has three meanings. So there's, I honor the light within you. The second meaning is, the light in me honors the light in you. And the third level of meaning is, I honor the place in you and in me, where when you are in yours and I'm in mine, there is only one of us. So this subject of light is so precious, and I think ultimately so important in trying to shape our understanding of the spiritual journey and what it means. You know, one of the most common questions that propels us onto the spiritual path is, what is this all about? And that comes to the fore of our awareness, especially when we suffer, when we go through difficult times, when we're in pain, either physical pain or emotional pain or spiritual pain. And I think that the light gets short shrift sometimes because it's so hard for us to understand. What does that mean, the light within? In some sense, in a very real sense, in fact, in the most real sense, it is literal light. And that is to say that, you know, Albert Einstein really helped us, along with many other physicists, but to understand our spiritual teachings in a scientific context. Now, the scientific context, you know, it's very interesting. I always would have been fascinated to talk with Dr. Einstein. And I wondered if it'd be like, you know, one time many years ago when Boeing 747s, which were at the time the largest airliner that had ever flown, carrying like 350 or 400 passengers, and actually three levels altogether, the cargo, the passengers, and then the upper deck where the cockpit was. I couldn't resist. The first time I flew on one, I went up to the cockpit after the flight, and the captain was in there turning switches off, and he said, "Oh, hi, come on in." I said, "Hi." I said, "You know, I have a question for you." I said, "Can you tell me how on earth this thing flies?" And he looked at me and smiled. He said, "I have the same question." So, and I'm thinking right now, Meher Baba is saying, understanding has no meaning. Love has meaning. And the light. So Einstein and other physicists explained to us that this universe, ultimately the physical universe, is made up of one thing, light. It's nothing but light. And what we perceive is light slowed down. Patterns of slowed down light, because in its original essence, it vibrates very fast. But we see these gross forms that are, you know, walls and floor and bodies and ceiling and cars and trees. It's all light, and it's all the same light. And I think that it's just too much for our minds to comprehend. You know, like, how could that be? But then I think of the concept of enlightenment. What does that mean? Interesting, it has the word light in it. And then I started to realize that an enlightened being is one who, among other things, literally can see that one light and also see all of the forms and understand, you know, you, with an enlightened being, you say, that people say, what was he or she like? Well, just pure love, because they're living in that light, and that light is the love. And when you tune into the oneness, you're tuning into love. And the wonderful experience of loving another human being so much that their happiness and safety is more important than your own. Imagine that. You love yourself right out of your own individual identity. Very, very visible in a mother's love for a child. A mother, you know, it's not every mother. Some of us had difficult mothers. Some of us had mothers who were emotionally ill. But the maternal instinct, when it's healthy, doesn't bat an eye in offering her life for a child. That's the kind of love. And how does that manifest? What does it mean? The light within illuminates the world. We talk about the fact that everywhere we look, we see what we're looking for. You could say when you're looking for God, all you see is God. Everywhere you look, you see what you're looking for. So an enlightened being sees that. You come to them and you say, oh, I am going through such problems. And they're looking, they're just seeing light. But light encased in a form that's suffering. How to let go of the suffering? Well, the path of bhakti yoga in Hinduism is the path of love and devotion, where you see everyone you meet as an incarnation of God, an incarnation of the light. And that all sounds wonderful until you meet somebody who makes your skin crawl. And then you say, right, sure. Everybody else, but not that person. They're not in the light. And the interesting thing is that may be the very person who is embodying your guru, has come to you to awaken you to the parts of you that still can't see the light everywhere. I know I have those parts. And it was really when I wrote the book, One Soul, One Love, One Heart, it was about that very thing. And the fact that some of the really great spiritual teachers would teach us by putting us in really difficult situations with really difficult people. And it's interesting because I do quite a bit of spiritual counseling. And I was talking to a woman the other day who was sharing that she was taking care of her dying mother and that her mother had never been nice to her. In fact, her mother had come from another country and never learned English. And they didn't really teach the children the native language from the other country. But she actually never been able to have a conversation with her mother. Now her mother's dying. And her mother's been angry her whole life. And I said to her, just imagine that this darkness that she's been caught in her entire life is a way for you to see the light within you, from which you ultimately see the light within her. How fascinating. And I think it's something that we, you know, in certain circumstances, we literally can see it. In other circumstances, it's just a feeling. It's just an essence. You know, I've told this a number of times here, but it always strikes me, that beautiful thing, that when we're really in love, when we're really vibrating with that wonderful sense that most of us, when we feel it, whatever it is that triggers it, we'll say, this is what I was born to feel. You know, because we've come home. We come home into our heart. It's like, yeah, I want to feel this all the time. And when you feel that place, it's fascinating because the people you don't like don't look so bad in that moment. And you experience compassion for them. It's like, yeah, I don't know what happened that made that person so angry, but it must have been awful. And you try to meet them with love. But if you get angry, then everything and everybody makes you angry, right? It's like everywhere you turn, they're after you. Angry and frightened, it's sort of two sides of the same coin. So we begin to change the momentum of that by beginning to love. And the more we love, the more we try to see that light in everyone. Just because someone is angry or confused or withdrawn or depressed or abusive or whatever it is, doesn't mean that there isn't light in them, the same light that's in you. So if we go back to namaste and we say, the light in me honors the light in you, I honor that place in you when you're in yours and I'm in mine, there's only one of us. The teaching is to go more into your own light. Go deeper into your own heart. Go deeper into your own being. If your mind gets triggered, try to have some way to remind yourself, this is an indication, I have to go deeper. I have to get more into the light within me, and then I'll see them for who they truly are. You know, I told this story, I'm sure, before, but I'll shorten it, because many of you have heard it, but the story about me when I was working with my father, who I've often said was the highest teacher of unconditional love that I've ever encountered, because he was really ornery. And he could be really unpleasant. And as he was dying, I was taking care of him and had to put my life on hold to take care of him. And he didn't seem to appreciate it very much. Realized later that he wasn't reinforcing my image of my But one night I went to see him, and I would go visit him pretty much every other day. And I lived with him for a while until I realized that was just too much. So he could afford nursing care, so he had nurses living in his home with him. And I went to see him, and he was really angry and upset and cranky and abusive. And after many years of working with this, I looked at him, I looked deeply into his eyes, I saw his suffering. I saw how, you know, he'd been a very successful businessman and had worn expensive suits and had expensive cars. Now he was just a withered bag of bones lying in a bed in pain, abusing his only son. I looked in his eyes and I said, I love you too, Dad. And at that moment, he softened. And he sort of laid back in his bed. He didn't look at me, but he looked up at the ceiling like he was looking at heaven. But he reached up his arm. I was standing next to his bed. And he started patting me on the shoulder and he said, "Good, good, good." That was that, you know. And I felt like I had just graduated. He didn't say, you know, "Let me apologize for all the horrible things I've done and said." No, it's just, you know, I expressed unconditional love and he changed. Now, that's a tricky one because in the nuts and bolts and warps and woofs of daily life, your mind might question, is that really the right approach? You know, am I reinforcing this person's nastiness? Am I approving of it? No, just sending love. You know, it's like Ram Dass used to say, love the soul, not the role. And one of the ways that I've worked with that over the years is to see each of us, every human being on earth, as what did Ram Dass used to say, we'd all been sent over from central casting to play our role. And whatever it is, you know, you play a good guy, you can play a bad guy. It's just a role. And you're playing the role of a good guy. Sometimes the role is to do what you can to inhibit the bad guys from doing their thing. But if you don't do it with love, it doesn't work. If you do it with anger, and that's really what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. Responding with love and fierce compassion. Like, compassion doesn't allow injustice or unkindness or dishonesty. But if you hate the person who's caught in the role of being unjust or unkind or unconscious or dishonest, you hate them, it's like we haven't learned the lesson. Because that's a realm of suffering too. That's a realm of, you know, it's interesting that all of the great religious traditions have given us these codes of conduct, which encourage us to think and behave in certain ways. Like, you know, and they're pretty standard, like don't steal, don't lie, don't kill, you know, don't covet, don't, you know. And you realize at a certain point that that is really not just a lot of do's and don'ts, like you better be good, but it's really much more the path to not suffering in life. And it's very simple. If I steal from you, I'm going to wind up paranoid. Something to hide. If I lie to you, I'm going to wind up spending so much time trying to remember what it was I said, so I don't undercut my own mistruth. You know, if you think of it partially, it's about how much time do you allow in your life, time and energy, to think about God, to think about the light, to live in the light. I was teaching a meditation course in Los Angeles this past August, and it was very interesting. One of the women came up to me afterwards and she said, you know, I really enjoyed this. And she said, I've always thought that I don't have time to meditate. And then she looked at me, she said, you know, I do have plenty of time to watch Netflix. But the process is so interesting because you can't really successfully embark on the spiritual journey because you think you should. The process is almost always that you've had enough suffering. You know, I've told the story of Ram Dass used to say to people who would come to him, who had what I came to term the yeah, but syndrome. But you all know those people. It's like, and we've had it in our own minds too, you know. I have this problem. Okay. Have you considered trying so-and-so? Yeah, but I can't do that because, well, then have you considered trying this? Yeah, but I can't do that because you offer something else. And, yeah, but I can't do that. Well, Ram Dass used to say to people, well, then you haven't suffered enough. Go back and suffer some more. And he said it with love. He said it with love. Because you understand at a certain point that you can't do it unless there's nothing else to do. What else is there to do? I did an interview a few years ago with Bethany Gagne. Some of you know her. I know her wonderful project on meditation. And she asked me that, why do you do what you do? I said, I can't think of anything else to do. But I tried everything else first. What keeps me doing it? She said, I said, suffering. I suffer if I don't. This is from Pema Chodron. She says, oh, the only reason we don't open our hearts and minds to other people is that they trigger confusion in us that we don't feel brave enough or sane enough to deal with. To the degree that we look clearly and compassionately at ourselves, we feel confident and fearless about looking into someone else's eyes. It's an interesting concept that we, you know, I close my heart. I'm not opening my heart to that person because they're dangerous. It's confusion. Confusion that we don't feel brave enough or sane enough to deal with. Fascinating. So to imagine that when we close our hearts and we're closing off that inner light, that's really what the process is doing. If I get angry, I'm closing off my heart. If I don't want to love you, I'm closing off my heart. Now, again, loving you doesn't mean that we have to be together or do anything. It's just that I forgive you, you know, and honor that you are a soul just like me and you're caught in an incarnation, which I don't have any business with at this point. But, you know, think of most all of us have felt tremendous confusion in the past 2 years. What a blessing. You know, I've said before, I only use profanity if I'm quoting a saint. So my friend Stephen Levine used to say, most people who think they have their shit together are standing in it. This from Thich Nhat Hanh. I've been a monk for 65 years, and what I have found out is that there is no religion, no philosophy, no ideology higher than brotherhood and sisterhood, not even Buddhism. So, I just want to invite you today, and we're going to do some practices in the workshop this afternoon that will help us to maybe get a little deeper grounding in that awareness of our own inner light and that awareness of the inner light in others. And I want to invite you to consider living more in that place, if you can remind yourself in the morning, when you wake up, maybe by looking in the mirror and seeing, just looking into your own eyes until you can see the light within you, your own light. If you sit with it, I know it's a creepy exercise for some people, but I highly recommend it. And it's not narcissistic. I'm not saying look at you and look how beautiful you are. I'm saying look at you, look in your eyes and see the light of God within you. It's there. It's here. It's no place else. Beautiful quote from Thomas Merton. At the center of our being is a point of nothingness, which is untouched by sin and illusion. A point of pure truth, a point or spark which belongs entirely to God, from which God disposes our lives. It is inaccessible to the fantasies of our own mind or the brutalities of our own will. This little point of nothingness and of absolute poverty is the pure glory of God in us. It is like a pure diamond blazing with the invisible light of heaven. It is in everybody. And if we could see it, we would see these billions of points of light coming together. In the face and blaze of a sun that would make all the darkness and cruelty of life vanish completely. I have no program for this seeing. It is only given, but the gate of heaven is everywhere. Ah, everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Wonderful to be with you. And if you can join us this afternoon, please do. Walk in the light and recognize that it's shining from inside you. Namaste.